Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, it's that time again for Successopies. We've got your recipe for success in business and living, and I'm your host, Lori Wilk, and we are live. It's great to be here having you join us on our show today. We've got a very special show today. My guest is Nancy Peacock, and she's the president and CEO of Washington Street Publishing Company out of Nashville, Tennessee. Nancy spent more than 20 years in Nashville, and she brings an insight into the whole music industry onto our show today. And as many of our listeners will understand and hear, you know, the music industry scene has been very male-dominated, and there are things that are happening that are changing the way. So welcome to the show, Nancy.
Hi, Lori. It's so good to talk with you. Thank you so much for having me on today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hope we can leave some inspiring words for everybody.
I know we will inspire them today. I want to share with your audience, tell them a little bit about your background and what brought you into the music industry.
I was a classically trained pianist and left that. But later, about 20 years later, I started dreaming songs in the night that forced me to go back to my music. And at that point, I became a songwriter and left Atlanta and moved to Nashville. And at that time, I realized that the business end of music industry was just as important as the creative side. And therefore, I chose to do a dual path, continue writing, but become more involved in the music industry. I started as a song plugger for a publishing company to kind of learn the ropes, and then I went on to become an independent song plugger for major songwriters in Nashville. From that, it evolved into forming my own publishing company, which I've had now for 9 years. And that has evolved from really pitching just to artists, mainly country and some pop and rock, to become a licensing, semi what you would call a boutique library for film, TV, trailers, and advertising. That's the bulk of what Washington Street Publishing does. As Lori will tell you, maybe later, I'm dabbling in a little bit of television production, trying to get involved in a reality TV show. And who knows where that will take me, maybe into music supervision for some shows, which would be lovely. I'd like to do that.
I think a lot of people are not familiar with the business side of the business of music. And you said a few things there about dealing with movies and trailers and TV shows. Can you explain a little bit about what you mean and how that part of the work, you know, is done?
Yes. And I will say that is a major trend right now in the music industry, because we're in a world where everyone wants our music free. It has really cut income revenue for record labels and the publishing houses, et cetera. So they're always seeking sources for music to make money. And with the increase in the television shows on major network, cable networks, and now online, There are hundreds of shows that need music. So the publishing company community, rather, I guess, in Nashville and in the other metropolitan areas of New York and L.A. are really switching focuses to finding great songs that they can send to music supervisors for each of these shows and get them on the air for what you call a licensing fee. Whoever owns the master, which is the actual sound recording of the song, and whoever owns the publishing copyright of the song, receives the money that's involved in a license. So it can be split up several ways, but it can be a lucrative business if you have good writers with your company, or if you're an independent band And some music supervisors hear your music online, on iTunes, somewhere, see you perform. They may latch onto you and try to immediately put your songs in a show. And music supervisors, especially in LA, are like a fraternity. They actually have a guild of music supervisors. And they will find somebody, be very proud, they're the first to discover, and then that person will just float right on through dozens of movies and TV shows because everybody loves music. An example would be Nora Jones when she first came out. Everywhere you turned, there was a Nora Jones song. Philip Pence is another one. Philip Phillips, he was in the Olympics, and now his songs are everywhere. Imagine Dragons, One Republic. There's so many bands that, you know, Lumineers. They find this different sound, and then they want it in all their shows. So
I love
it's becoming a very lucrative business, and it's helping the sales that you know, the revenue that dwindled with the lack of CD sales.
So when it comes to like the money part, if a band is that lucky to have their music licensed, are the deals more or less like, are there typical deals, or are they each very, very unique? Like, I have heard, you know, deals in, it's like certain licensing of products becomes almost kind of percentage or more standard kind of deal. So how does the music industry work?
For licensing for TV shows, it's pretty standard. I mean, it will range. Most budgets could be $1,000, $2,500. It can go on up. There are real exceptions. If it's an actual song that has been a hit song on the Billboard chart, those bring in huge licenses. I know there was an example of a Beatles song that was in Mad Men, and I think they paid $250,000 for it. But they have a huge budget. They have so many sponsors on that show that they were able to afford that. But that's a rare exception that somebody will do that. But to give you that example, though, that comparison, if you're an indie band, a new singer-songwriter that is on the up and, you know, just coming up, maybe not even signed to a record label yet, you're probably looking more in that $1,000, $2,500 range for a song. And those that are major artists like Taylor Swift, Lady Gaga, Beyonce, they're going to be generating quite a bit more. It depends also in a film. A film would be the same thing. It could be, $5,000, $10,000 in a Disney film or something. But then if you were doing the opening or closing credit songs, those could yield $50,000, $75,000. I mean, a lot more money. A lot more money.
Wow. So it's like hitting the lottery.
The other thing
that is somebody
really
amazing. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, the other industry that's changing, has changed rapidly in the last 5 to 10 years, is the ad agency commercials. You used to have these huge creative departments that wrote jingles. They took the product, they wrote a little jingle and recorded it, and that was it. And now the clients want to be branding themselves with an up-and-coming band, some artist. And so they check social media. They want to, you know, they want their songs, but they also want to know they're touring. You know, maybe they're just getting ready to release an album. But they choose their music now for commercials from real existing songs that are being sold on iTunes instead of having some person write a jingle. That may still be done some, you know, like on your small local radio programs, but not on major commercials that you see on TV. And and online and other places. The other place that money is generating more and more higher end is the trailers, because trailers for movies are their money, their income comes from the marketing department of a production company. That's they have to get that marketing done in order to sell the movie. So they have more money in their budget. So if you can get songs in the trailer, you'll be making more than you would in just a normal TV show. So
what great advice that you have. I love that. You have great advice for people and stuff they probably didn't have any idea about. So that's really important to if a band has their music, to get it up there and out there in, like you mentioned, iTunes and social media, and really
and
get themselves known so that they get found. Right?
Exactly. So people can find you. Absolutely. I think the actual sale of products still in the music industry, merch is probably one of the most important things. People are touring a lot now because they aren't, you know, getting their sales necessarily from, there are no record stores per se. I mean, you can still buy some CDs at Target and Walmart, but there aren't record stores in all your major cities anymore. So going around and touring and selling your merchandise is and selling your CDs, you know, on the tours is a big source of income for the artists themselves. And they don't make 10 and 12 song CDs anymore. They make what you call an EP, and that's usually 5 or 6 songs. And then if you're selling really well, you can make more EPs throughout a year, but at least you don't have to start off with that major investment of, you know, 10 to 12 songs.
I think that's also kind of cool, and it probably has to do with the attention span of people. People have a shorter attention span, and they want shorter consumable type of things. And I think that part is really great news for the bands being able to come out with something that's less elaborate and less, you know, as you said, expensive to invest in just to get yourself going. And so I think that's very encouraging.
Right. The one thing that you would want to happen to you if you're an up-and-coming artist is to have a major artist tweet about you. And I know a lot of people know that Carly Rae, that song that she had, Justin Bieber heard it and mentioned her, and, you know, instantly she became a mega star in Canada and all around the world. And, you know, Call Me Maybe, that was her song. And he tweeted, you know, his tweets, I don't know how many. And there she was, you know, selling millions. So if you can be, you know, find stars and become friends with them and have them listen to your EP and maybe just tweet about one of your songs on your EP, you have no idea what that will do to you. As you've mentioned, and you know so well, I know Lori Wilk knows so well, social media can be very powerful.
So a good friend of yours, you know, you also want to get involved with the right publicists also know people and can sometimes open those doors as well, because everybody, they know what's going on. Yeah.
I was just going to briefly say, a friend of mine here that I've written with, Kelsey Ballerini, is a new artist on Black River. They're calling her the new Taylor Swift because Taylor has left the country market. And Kelsey's very young, 20, and she's an extremely talented writer as well as singer. And she got tweeted by Taylor. Taylor just said, I'm driving around listening to Kelsey Ballerini's new EP and hashtagged her single. And, I mean, it changed everything. I mean, Kelsey immediately had millions of fans. Then she got a call from Taylor, and Taylor invited her to come to New York and go to a party. She was throwing a big party for one of her best friends and thought Kelsey might want to come and visit. So Kelsey got to New York and go to a party. So,
wow.
Amazing how your life can change with one tweet.
In an instant, in a flash, in the click of a mouse.
Exactly. Exactly. I know we were talking
now
earlier.
With women.
Yeah, talking about women. Mm-hmm. Women in the industry. And it's an upward battle for women. Overall, in the music industry, there are very, very few that really hold any leadership positions as far as being heads of major labels, being heads of major publishing houses, or producers of records, engineers. I think maybe in the pop world and rock world, et cetera, of L.A., there are probably more moving up than there are in Nashville itself. There are still to this day no female producers, heads of labels, heads of major publishing companies, and also producers. And it's something that I think women are trying to push through those barriers, but it just hasn't happened here in Nashville. There are women organizations here. There's a Women's Music Business Association, Source Nashville. There are various organizations here. And then there are a lot of them in L.A., L.A. Women in Music, Women Helping Women, Women in the Movie Making Movies. There are organizations that women are getting into that will, I think, unite them and help them move up the ladder, but it's still an issue for females. I was telling Lori earlier, I was so excited when I read in the paper that the Cannes Film Festival was going to have a female-directed movie for the at one time, they said, it was the very first ever in the 68 years that they've had this festival. And it was so exciting to read about that. Her name is Emmanuelle Vercoe, and her film is All I Can Hope. But apparently it was an error that there was actually one in 1987, so this one is not the first, but it's the second. But it's still a major, major breakthrough. Women in film TV are only accounting for about 15% of the actual business. And it's harder, probably more in the film business than it is on TV right now. TV has made some breakthroughs, and that's probably because these film, you know, directors and producers, there's Michelle McLaurin who did Breaking Bad, and she has Game of Thrones and Walking Dead. There's a woman named Leslie Glatter that also helps with Walking Dead, and she does Homeland. But they're getting into these dark, you know, zombie, you know, scary movies, the American Horror Show, and all these that are appealing to the mass young people. And I think because women in the past have always been more into the comedy, what's called like a chick flick kind of TV show, they didn't last long. It's hard to do some of those romantic type 30-minute shows. And so now that they're moving into this other direction, they're gaining fame. More power to them, because some of those TV shows are a lot of it's hard to watch. They're really gory. And it's so interesting to have these females moving up and winning Emmys and things for their shows. And I'm real proud of them. Very proud of them.
Yay. Yeah, I happen to be working with an amazing woman right now, and you know her, Danielle Silverman, who is executive producer and COO of BYL Network, which is an online television network. And so she brought all of her talent from over 20 years of the television business onto the online TV, and she's definitely pioneering and making great inroads. So you're going to be hearing more about BYL Network. That's a definite. The question I have for you is, what impact are you seeing in the publishing industry based on the fact that there's so many of these websites right now that are doing things like crowdfunding and, you know, changing the dynamics of how people are trying to raise capital? Can you see an impact in the business from it?
You mean like the Kickstarters? Those types,
right, the Kickstarters, the
Indiegogos,
the GoFundMes. I mean, there's so many of them. The PubSlush, and, you know, all different types of crowdfunding venues where people are going out there and saying, "Hey, here's my project. You know, will you help me? You know, provide money for it?"
Right.
How do you see that changing the industry?
That has helped the individual artist a lot. Because if they couldn't get signed to a major label, then they have this outlet to go ahead and produce their CD. And they've done really well. And even some artists who were, you know, artists on Curb Records, I know in the country business, there have been artists who have been major artists on some of these labels, and because they've gotten a little bit older or whatever for various reasons, have been dropped from the label. But they have gone forward because they have fan bases. They have a big fan base. And so they've gone forward to make new albums also by doing some of these Kickstarters. It's a wonderful thing to me to know that the world itself will read a story from someone and believe in it and donate. I think it's a beautiful thing in our world today. And I know this is something that has been missing, you know, having those philanthropists that it's kind of like back in the days of Italy, the Medici family, and how they just gave money to hire people for their art, to make that sculpture, to do that painting, to make that music. You know, it's finding those kinds of people that believe in the beauty and the craft of the art itself. And that we need more of. There's an organization out in California. It's not really well known, and I won't mention names, but you can find it online, and it's called Alley to the Valley, and it's made up of females only who are philanthropists, and there were a lot of them from the East Coast that eventually moved west, and they have put together this organization, and they're very influential women in venture capital and finance, government, law, media, all different aspects, and they hold meetings and opportunities for people to come and present their project and find someone who might invest in it with them. It's sort of like going on Shark Tank, so it's something that some people might want to look into. It's called Alley to the Valley, A-L-L-E-Y. To the Valley, and if we had more of those organizations, it would be wonderful to have the opportunity, instead of having to struggle to find someone who could do it, you'd have an organization that you could go present your project to on a regular basis.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
So are you saying, are there still pathways, how do people nowadays, you know, get the record label? You know, are there still strong pathways for people to follow, or is it almost like the Wild West again? It's broken up, and I guess I'm not clear with all the changes in the industry what the process
how you
is
get,
in today's
get
world.
Artists?
For the
they,
artists to be able to get signed with a label.
The quickest way in the city of Nashville, for sure, is to be on American Idol, The Voice, or one of these TV shows that has given this artist a huge fan base. When a when a person comes with a fan base like that, it immediately saves the promotion department, because it's so easy to promote someone who already has millions of fans.
Right. Wow.
So if you had a lineup and you had it narrowed down to two people, and one was just a great singer and a great writer and everything else, but this other person came in and had been on the American Idol, the top 10 finalists, that person will get it.
You're going to take the person who's been in the final, right? Wow.
Yep, absolutely. The other thing that has changed, the record industries now are really like major distributors of the product and the artist itself, putting them on tours, and promoting their songs on radio, commercial radio. They don't sign an artist and take a year or two to develop them like they used to in the past. That is usually done by the publishing company nowadays, or a management company. They have to develop the artist and then take them to the label. And a lot of times money comes with the deal. So that's just kind of a given too, to help with promotion.
Wow.
I think that's probably one of the biggest changes in who's getting signed. It's if they've been on TV, if you look at some of the lineups, it's amazing how that's changed. Now,
wow.
So
that means the focus, the kids have to go, these kids and the parents have to direct them to the TV shows and play, and like you said, play that game, you know?
Exactly. Now, it's different in the pop, some of the, maybe the urban, rock band world and stuff like that. Those people, they need to do the competitions that will get them to Bonnaroo, to get them to South by Southwest, to get them to Coachella. Bonnaroo's here in Tennessee. It's huge. It's just huge. And Coachella is the same out in California. And then South by Southwest is Austin, Texas. Those three, if you can find ways to get yourself into one of those three, that will make you so visible to the scouts for the major labels and help your career immensely.
You have been a wealth of information today. And I know that you participate in all the social media as well. Do you have any messages or guidance for us in those areas of, you know, the things that you might be doing connected to social media? Any kind of guidance on that?
It's very important, and I know this from pitching to, as I mentioned earlier, for the commercials, for the ad agencies, and also for some of the music supervisors for TV, VH1, MTV, that appeals to young people. And they will look. They will actually look and check. They want to see that you definitely have Twitter, that you have Facebook, that you have an active website. And then now Instagram is just huge. That's blown up. I'm amazed sometimes. I have a friend who is an actor, and he was in Disney's Girl Meets World recently, this past season when it came back. I mean, it started up on Disney. And after the first show, I think he had over 60,000 people on his Instagram site just from starting in that show, 60,000. I mean, it was overwhelming.
We are at the time of the show. I hate to get to Nancy. It's the end of our program. If you have been listening, I'm your host, Lori Wilk, and I've had a great time talking to Nancy Peacock, the president and CEO of Washington Street Publishing Company out in Nashville. Until we get together again, be successful and be safe. Thanks, Nancy. Goodbye for now.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right,
so
come
much.
Back soon. Come back
okay.
soon.
All
Thanks.
Right. Bye-bye.